async ASP.NET, as the name implies, would look at how we can improve the performance of our applications using modern technologies. And not only. Before I start, I want to ask a question. How many of you are ASP.NET Web Forms developer or are still using ASP.NET Web Forms? Quite many people. How many of you have moved already from ASP.NET 2.0 and not use it at all? So you still have a lot of ASP.NET 2.0 applications, if I understand correctly. And how many of you are using only ASP.NET 4 or 4.5 or even looking at 5? A bit fewer. Okay, so we might have something to talk about it. Those are the sponsors of this presentation, of this conference. So before we start, let's get a little bit of an introduction. Usually I show different flags. I start by telling I'm coming normally from Romania, but I'm traveling with a Swedish passport. I'm driving with a Bermudian license. I live in Spain and I work in England. So there are a lot of flags over there that you will see. So this is a bit about the places that I'm associated with, or the countries that I'm associated with. My name is Tiberiu Kovac. The short version is Tibi. I think it's easier for everyone. I have over 20 years of experience working with computers. As of this week, I'm a director of technology for ADT for the whole Europe. So my role would be to help customers actually embracing Microsoft technologies and Microsoft Cloud. Since 2004, I'm a Microsoft certified trainer, meaning that I spend the big time or big bulk of my time in a classroom teaching other people how to use .NET. You know, if you can do it, do it. If not, teach others how to do it. So that's where I'm at, you know. I'm still good at teaching. So when I'll be done with teaching, I'll move to managing other people. I'm almost there. For all my contributions, Microsoft awarded me the Microsoft MVP title, I think, 5 years ago. I was an MVP on technical computing. I was an MVP on Windows Azure. Now I'm an MVP on ASP.NET IIS. It's like the graveyard of all the ASP or all the MVPs. You know, if you don't have a specialty, they put you in the ASP.NET. So that's what I ended up over there. I used to work closely with Telerik, but I'm still an MVP and insider in their program. I work closely with Microsoft with their ASP.NET team as part of the ASP Insider group. I have two daughters, 9 and 7. They are going to school in Tenerife, and I'm a geek, of course. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. If you are on Twitter, you can tweet about the conference using .NET Spain 2015 hashtag so people can see that we have a great time here. You can find me as Tibor19. And I was expected to do this session right after the lunch, so when siesta is, when everybody was actually asleep, and I wasn't expecting people to pay attention to what I have to say. Now, the challenge is that the speaker that was supposed to be here, he knew what he was doing, so he switched time slots, so I will have to do his session, and he will do my time slot when everybody would be asleep. Agenda. In order to understand what we have to talk about it, we would look like at a life cycle of an ASP.NET page. I know everybody should know what an ASP.NET web form page has as a life cycle and what are all those things that we are going to, but let's look at it and see if it's really what you think it is. Then we'll talk about load testing. In order to prove that an application is not performant, you need to do something. So how do we prove, or how do we find out that an application is not working? And more important, what happens when this particular application is not working? And then we'll look at some of the asynchronous pages. We'll look at asynchronous actions when we talk about MVC applications. And then we'll look at asynchronous support in C# 5.0. And this summarizes the text. No, I have some code as well on my presentation. But then I would show only Visual Studio. So I said that I will start with the ASP.NET page lifecycle. The first step is init. Actually, it's pre-init, completed, but all those messages, they have one common name called init. After init comes load. So normally in init, you initialize whatever data you want to show on your web form. You go and open a database, or you create some of the objects. Then on load, you go and load the data from the database in order to be able to show it. Then you have pre-render. Pre-render is like, I'm almost there. I'm almost at the point where I will send the page to the client. If there is anything else that you would like to do, that would be a good time. And of course, there is a pre-render complete. The reason I show that and not all the others, like pre-load and load completed, and then but I show pre-render and pre-render complete, is because, as we will see, pre-render complete plays a very interesting role in the whole in this whole life cycle of a page. After pre-render complete comes render, of course, and then when render comes, it means that it's the end of the, you know, modeling or creating the objects that you want to show on the page. So when you want to do something, pre-render complete would be the absolute last place where you can modify the content of the page. So in order to be able to show you that we have some problems, I prepared a simple application. And the application is nothing more than a recipe database. So let me find the right one. I'm using TFS, so I will try to write as little code as possible, because on this small keyboard, I'm always, you know, trying to find what I need to press and where and why. Let me hide everything so we have enough place for the code. It's okay, you can see the code more or less. Okay, let's see what application does, first of all. Of course, home, yes. So application, it's called the spaghetti code files, where you get 9 recipes, you know. It's a garage project. When I was young, I tried to do something to help my mom to, you know, to summarize all her recipes and how would you do, and, you know, you put them. And, of course, I'm looking at, you know, you have the possibility to search, but, of course, you like to play the Russian roulette, and then you give and say, I feel lucky. And when you say I feel lucky, what I'm doing, actually, I'm going to the database, and I'm trying to pull whatever recipe I have. So what I'm doing behind the curtains, it's a random between 1 and 10, and then I take one of those recipes and then just show it on the screen. What I'm doing more, I'm showing what kind of method I'm using to read from the database. In this case, I'm using the synchronous access to the database. And then how long it took for me from the time I started the page life cycle till I actually finished the pre-render complete, so I have all the information to be able to show it on the page. So I do it a couple of times, and you will see it's almost 3 seconds. Now, what's happening? I know Unai will kill me for that, but what I'm doing, I'm creating a store procedure for every single piece of data. So I have 3 store procedures. And inside my store procedure, I'm starting with a delay for 1 second, and then I'm retrieving the data. Why? Because I'm trying to simulate that my database response takes more than 1 second. Now, let me see. How many of you have a query in their application that takes more than 1 second? Yeah, okay. So you show courage. That's nice. That's nice. Yeah. So it's pretty common. And when we look here at the data, I mean, I have the data divided into 3 different islands, let's call it. I have some details about the recipe. I have the ingredients that I'm using in the recipe. And I have the instructions that I need to follow in order to do the recipe, in order to cook it. So pretty simple, 3 tables, 3 store procedures, and that's what I'm showing. Now, Mom came to me and said, you know what, your application doesn't work. It takes a lot of time to go to the, you know, to the homepage. Say, come on, can't be that. If you look here, I have nothing. It's all static. It's only pages. It shouldn't take that long to go to the homepage. But she still argues with me. I know she likes to argue, but, you know, I need to prove her wrong or right or something. I need to look and see what the problem is. In order for us to see the problem, let me show you a little bit of the code, just so you see what I'm doing. I am starting a stopwatch so I know exactly when I do the page load or the first thing that I want to read from the page. I know exactly that it starts now. And then I'm looking at a recipe ID. If there is a number that it's different than 0, then it means that it's an okay recipe ID, and then I'll try to read the data. So I'll do a get details, get ingredients, get instructions. Now, what I'm using, it's a little bit of a stretch. It's not really, or today you won't see this code anymore, but when I start with this application almost 10 years ago, you know, and try to show that, What I was using was ASP.NET 1.0. So for instance, I'm not using var here because if you use ASP.NET 2.0 with C# 2.0, you won't be able to have var. You don't have lambda expressions. You don't have a lot of things that now are actually pretty normal. You use them everywhere. You don't even think about it. You don't even think that they are not, that you don't have them at your disposal. But there are still applications out there written in ASP. I'm not talking ASP.NET. I'm talking classic ASP, and I'm talking VB6. So ASP.NET 1.1, it's not very uncommon at all. 2.0, most of the people that are on 2.0 have actually a pretty good life because they can easily update to a newer version. So I'm creating a data reader. I read the data using the data reader. It returns only one record, and then I get the text, I get the image URL, I get the price, and I get the time. The next one would be a list of ingredients. For the list of ingredients, I'm using the data source and data binding, and as a data source, I'm using actually another reader. Again, was pretty common in the ASP.NET 2.0 world. And then the last one is the get instructions. Again, I'm going and executing a reader, and then I'm using the data binding to bind the data. Pretty simple. So what I need to do now is to load test my application. And I am not that courageous, and I won't do it on the cloud. I actually deployed the application, and you have the possibility to use Visual Studio Online to load your application and get all the information back. But I really didn't want to spook it too much. So what I was doing, I was actually running all those tests locally. So in order to run a load test on your application, you will have to add a load test project. So how you do that, you go into your solution and say add new project, and the project type would be web performance and load test. Normally, with the web performance and load test, you can create web tests. A simple web test, it goes to a page, it tries to, it submit the get and then gets back the result, and then you can write some validation rules, like how long it take, or what's the response string, or what's the content of a certain field, and so on. So you can use that to automate the test of your application. Based on those web tests, you can create load tests. And the load test can be run actually local or can be run on the cloud. The only way the way you change this is by using different test settings. So by changing my test settings, I can say I want you to use the cloud version. I don't want you to use the local version. Now, my normal presentation computer just crashed and I reinstalled it with Windows 10. So I was a little bit hesitant to bring it with me. So I took this other one, which is Windows 8.1, and the problem is that it's not as powerful as the other one. So what I will do now, I will run some load testing on my machine, and I will run the application, I'll run the database, I'll run more or less everything. So it's really, you have to look at it as with a pinch of salt. But what it happens actually, what would happen is that you will see how your application is loaded and how your application is responding. So when you have a web test, for instance, let me show you a web test. I call it fast load, but actually it's the home page. I'm saying go please to the default ASPX, use the HTTP localhost whatever as start address, and then the expectation should be that the response URL is the same and that the time goal is less than 5 seconds or whatever time goal you want to set on it. Normally it's 30 seconds, so if it takes more than 30 seconds, it will mark this test as a failed test. But you can specify individually if you want more or less than 5 seconds. So simple, just go there. If I run this test, you would see it just show me. It goes to the page and then it submits and then gets back the response and it says, okay, how long it took to run that. Of course, the application might need to run, so let me do that. So I have the application started. It should have been started already, so let me try again and do that. Yeah, it doesn't work because actually I'm looking at the wrong address, sorry. I need to change this one if I want to show you something into 15 15001. This is the address that I'm using. So let's try again. Okay. So now I got 200 OK, and it shows me the request, the response, so I can look at it and I can change it, I can modify it. So it's just go to my, you know, go to a certain address, read the data, and then validate the result that you got back. Now, when you want to create a load test, the way you do it, you go into your project, your test project, Solution Explorer, and then just say add new load test. When you add a load test, you got the welcome, and then you call this a scenario. So normally in a scenario, what you say, okay, I want it to behave like a normal user, for instance. So when user is coming to my page, is pressing on the home page, and then goes search for a recipe, or it press on the I feel lucky, or it does that. So you can have a scenario. You can use a name on the scenario. How do you want to distribute the load? So you can say, okay, I want you to go and take some think times between the pages. So I'm not going on the first page and then write on the second. I'm pressing the first page, I'm waiting a little, I'm looking around, and then I press on the second. So knows how to do that. The next one would be if you want to have some think time between iterations. So, okay, the same user I'm using to do tests over and over again. So should I just do it like that, or should I wait 2 seconds between runs? And so on. How do I want to load the application? So I want to say, okay, I have 250 users. 20 users, maybe it's too little. Yeah, so with 250 users, I want to load my application and see exactly what the result would look like. Next, I would look at how do I want to mix the tests. So if I take two web tests, for instance, one is going to one page, another one is going to another page, how do I want to mix them? I can take 3/4 of that and 1/4 of that, or I can take 50-50. I use a normal distribution, so I will just use this. Test mix, which tests do I want? I have two tests in my solution, so I can say, okay, run both of them. So one of them is going only to the home page, the other one goes to the I feel lucky page. So those two are running parallel. I say, okay, and I have a normal distribution, 50-50. If I don't want to run any of them, one of them, for instance, I just say zero, so it won't be used at all. Or if I want to use the normal distribution, I say, okay, you do the math, split 100 in two, because I can't do that. What kind of network connection do you want for your users? Most of the users will be on LAN, but some grandmothers or my mom will come from, you know, from an old modem. So you can even specify that, or you might have people using 3G or a cable modem. So whatever you might see fit, let's leave it to LAN. I don't, you know, it doesn't matter normally. But you know, when you have, for instance, a lower bandwidth, it will take a little bit longer, and that needs to be taken into account because the responses come. It takes longer to come to the user and so on. So the user is keeping the line busy a little bit longer. Again, browsers. You know, if you feel lucky, you can go even with Internet Explorer 5.5. If your application really runs that, you know, on that old browsers, you can even simulate that. But let's take Internet Explorer 9, you know, and then move on. If I want to add any other counters, normally I just get what the load test it gives me, and then I have some run settings. For how long do I want to run it, and how long do I want the warm-up to be? So what's the warm-up? Normally when you go and hit the site for the first time, the page needs to be compiled, and you don't really want to take that into account when you trace the performance of your application. So what you want to do, you say, okay, you know what, whatever tests you manage to do in the first 10 seconds or 20 seconds or 1 minute, or if you SharePoint, first 10 minutes, you know, don't count it. Don't put it as a the end result. And then when everything is done, you know, when the warm-up phase is done, you say, I want the application or I want my test to run for 10 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever. Sampling rate, how often do I want to look at the counters? The lowest you can have is 5 seconds. And then I use actually 2 minutes, not five. I mean, I know it will take a lot of time to run those, and I won't have to do anything, and then it's lunchtime. So, but let's stick with 2 minutes, and I will show you what happens. So if I press finish here, what would happen? I would get exactly this load test recipe that I just created, local load test. So this is the one. It has exactly the same content, exactly the same things, but it was already created. And the reason that I already created that is because I run it locally a couple of times, you know, so I get some results already. So I will show you how it looks for the first iteration, and then for the rest of them, I will show you, I will load a predefined set of results. Again, this being my, you know, my travel machine that I usually don't do for high-performance presentations, I won't get very spectacular numbers. On the other machine that I usually use, the numbers are actually pretty awesome, and I will explain you the difference. And I will explain exactly what happens as well. So let's start and do that. Let's make sure that the application is still up and running. Yes, it's here. 3 seconds. So let's start it. I press here, run, load test. Yeah. It says that some of my old tests will be removed if I run a new one, but I don't have so many old tests there that will disappear. So, stop, no. Why? So it tries to do the cloud one for some reason. Let's go back to Solution Explorer. So I have actually a cloud test settings and a local test settings, and normally it should use this one, active load. So let's try again. Yeah. So now it runs locally. Come on. Come on. So I do have here a database, and for some reason doesn't want to start. And let's see. Local, next, okay. Okay. SQL Server Explorer, come on. Data connections. Add connection. So let me see. So the thing is that this one is using the local DB. Local DB. Slash MS SQL local DB. Attach, browse, see users. So this is the name of the database. Come on, who's using it now? Cancel. Let me restart Visual Studio because this is pretty strange. So I just ran it before I came on stage. That's the thing that's a bit strange. Okay, Server Explorer, new data connection, local DB MS equal local DB. Let's see. Nope, it's not here. Attach file, browse, see users. Like this, and load. Why? So then it should run this without any problem. Come on. Team Explorer. And if I don't have the database, I won't be able to show you the results either, because it reads them from the database. Let me try just to see. Okay. Login for user. Local controller. Close. How do I restart the MS Local DB? How do I do that? So let's see. This one, does this one work? Maybe I should just remove this. Okay. Remove this. Connect. Come on. Local DB. MS SQL. Local DB. This is here, touch, browse, see users. Unai, which script? Can you? I need help from the database expert.
In Visual C directory, you have the script to create the load test database. You can get the script, go to database and execute the script to create a new database.
In this one?
Visual C directory. Run files.
So, we are creating a new test database. Load test result repository. This one?
Execute this script in database, and you have a new database for load test.
But the database is already created, so can I use the existing database?
Yeah, but the problem is you can create a new database, load test,
okay. Yes, yeah.
And in your test run test config, target to this new
okay. Load. Okay, so.
You have the SQL Server Management Studio here?
No. Local DB v 1.0. So should I?
SQL blah blah blah. Load test.
Load test 2010 B.
Okay. Great. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
SQL script in Disney World.
Okay, new query. Okay, so if we manage to do that, okay, we'll have a new database. Okay, so now we have a new database, Solution Explorer, okay, Okay. Local execution and say. And where do I set where is that?
I think this is here. Okay.
This is the load test. Yeah. It's coming back. I need to either I restart the computer or I don't know. But I don't know what. Okay, so I will tell you what will happen. It will start drawing two parallel lines at the beginning, where it will show how long it takes to render default ASPX and how long it will take to render the random page ASPX, the random recipe ASPX. And the default ASPX, normally it will take something like it should take normally under 1 second. And if you look at the one with the random recipe, it shouldn't take more than 3-point-something seconds, because we have three seconds waiting in the database, but everything else is pretty quick, so it shouldn't take longer than that. Now, when we run the load test, what happens actually is that the default ASPX starts to take longer and longer, and with 250 users, we end up with default ASPX taking like 6 to 10 seconds, and the random recipe taking between 10 and 13 seconds. And that's constant. It doesn't matter how many times you do it, but that will always happen. Does anyone know why? Does anyone wants to guess why this happens? Unfortunately, I cannot prove it, but this is... Okay, let me try. And see. I think it's still there. It's cool. Nice. So, thank you. Thank you. Two. Dos cervezas. Okay. So, if we look at them, it takes longer and longer, and you will see that the time for each page to render is pretty high. And my question is, why do you think that happened? I'll have to do that at least two times more because I lost all the previous results. But why does it take default ASPX 4 seconds? It's actually not running my test because the site is not running anymore. So let me try again. It's up and running. Now run the load test and see. Okay. So, again, why do you think that would happen? What do you think is the problem here? So instead of having like under 1 second or 0.29, like you have the first response here, and 3.56 like you have the second, the time just goes up and up. You see 13 seconds, 8 seconds, 18 the maximum, and 13.3. Any ideas? Yes? Sorry? It's synchronous. What that means is that every single request that you are making to your web application will actually occupy one thread. How many threads do you think you have available for requests by default in ASP.NET? Very few. 12 per processing unit. So processor, it would be unfair to say. So if you have a dual core with hyper-threading, that would mean 48 threads. So when you reach 48, what happens? Your request will stay in the HTTP sys queue. It won't be sent to your application. And that's what happened. Instead of delivering the home page, you know, your application is still waiting for a thread to be freed because your threads are all busy going to the database and waiting for 3 seconds to receive data from the database and return that back. Of course, the simplest solution would be to increase the number of threads. And the recommended number is 5,000, actually. Go figure. So that would mean like you would have around 20,000 different user, 20,000 different thread requests at the same time on your application, which it's a little bit more. But when you talk about applications with millions of users, you really don't want to get there. This application is specifically scaled down in order for us to be able to keep this, you know, to show that what happened. And this is a normal behavior. You will see that in your normal application. If we look now at the results, they're almost done. You will see that it took actually, we managed to do like 1,000 requests. We got a lot of, you know, waiting time, 15.6, 6.82, and so on. 1,384 times we managed to ask for this under 2 minutes. And we were trying, you know, but the application couldn't leverage that. So, what would be the solution? The title of the presentation says it all, to try to use some asynchronous technique in your application. So let's go back and see how will that help. ASP.NET team thought about it from the very beginning. So already from ASP.NET 1.0, we had this possibility to do synchronous and asynchronous operations. If you remember a delegate always had a beginning invoke and end invoke, so you could use some thread from the thread pool and, you know, get a callback to call your results when they were done. A synchronous method, if you look at them, so the synchronous methods run this way. You call the method, you wait for the result, and then, of course, you can run maximum one method at a time. And when I talk about the method, it's not a function in my code. It's something that I want to do, like get something from the database, get data from a web service, get data from the network, or something like that. So that's what I mean by a method. It's not really a function in my code. But it's very easy to program and understand because, you know, the flow of execution, it's easy to follow. You can easily see what's happening. You don't have to go back and forth and look and try to figure out what exactly is the problem if something goes wrong. But when you do asynchronous, you call the method and the method returns right away. When your method returned, you don't know if the method will fail, if the method gives you a result or anything. So what you have to do is to provide a callback, and in that callback you will get either the result or you will get the exception thrown back into your application. The biggest advantage is that you have actually several methods that can be run at the same time. Again, by method I mean database, web service, or whatever. As well, this will help with the scalability of your application. But there is a big problem. And the problem is it's harder to program. Or at least it used to be harder to program. Although if you look at the applications now, and a lot of people that are saying we are using async and it's much easier, they can still actually create a lot of problems for themselves. I talked about the delegates. One of the most used delegates definition in .NET world, it's the event handler. What's the event handler? It's a method that takes an object and an event arg as a parameter and returns void. Yeah? With any delegate definition, you get 3 methods. One method that is invoke, it's actually calling the method that delegate points to, or the methods if you have several methods. You have a begin invoke. The begin invoke takes the normal parameters that the method will take, plus it takes an async callback. It's the callback method that I talked about earlier, plus some state if you want to pass around some state between the caller and the callee. And then it will return an async result. The async result, you can use it to either wait for it or to see exactly when your application was or when your method was done running. Or you can just ignore it, because if you specified a callback, then you will get it back in the callback as a parameter. So you can, again, have that. And what you do in the callback, you normally call end invoke. And this is the recommended way. You should always call the end invoke if you call begin invoke, because then you will release the threads and you'll release all the handles that you were keeping. So .NET is much happier. So how does this influence the lifecycle of your page? So between the pre-render and pre-render complete, there is something called async point. At the async point, all the async calls that you are creating in your application are actually completed there. So if you start something asynchronously, it would be run there, and pre-render complete would not be triggered until all your asynchronous methods are run. So let's look how can we asynchronize the application. So if we go back here, I have now in Team Explorer. One way to do it is to use a method called add on pre-render async complete. No. Add on pre-render async complete does the following. Takes a method, an asynchronous method, and then queue it to that asynchronous calls list. And then when this time comes, so after pre-render, it will make sure that the method runs, but it won't wait until then to run the method. So the method can be actually triggered already when you queue it for when you queue it for running. So if I take my application, if I had before execute reader, now I need to use the begin execute reader. If you remember, when I had the delegate was split into two: a begin invoke and end invoke. And the same goes for execute reader. So in ADO.NET, all the methods that were taking longer time were actually split, and you had beside the execute reader or beside the execute method, you had the begin execute and end execute methods as well, so you could do an asynchronous call. Now, because I'm using C Sharp 3.0 or a bigger version of C Sharp 3.0, I can use Lambda expressions. Without Lambda expressions, I would need to actually specify delegate. So my code would be, this is the method, and this is what I have to do at the beginning, this is what I have to do at the end, and then with those two pieces, I need to put them together and send them to add-on pre-render complete. And then the code is like this, and you always look like this, and you know, you get some problems with the neck, because the code is actually pretty hard to follow. Because we are using C Sharp 3.0, I can use Lambda expressions, and instead of declaring delegates and something else, I can actually make it look like it would be a normal synchronous method. So here I have execute reader, and then when the execute reader is done, I get the reader. Of course, in order for me to get the reader, I need to call the end execute reader. So this is the whole, let me call it, this is the whole magic of making it work as an asynchronous call in your application. And then the code is exactly the same as it used to be before. So it's nothing changed, and it works exactly the same. How will that influence my application? If I try to run the test again, let's see. Doesn't show. Stop. Because I need to first start it, of course. So when I start my application, what would happen, let me show you. So I've done that with the add-on pre-render async complete three times for every of the methods I had before. So that would enqueue those methods. So when I go and run my application, if I do go to I feel lucky, the result should be the same. Why? Because add-on pre-render complete, although it runs asynchronously, it runs sequentially. So all the asynchronous operations are run one after the other in the order you call them with add-on pre-render async complete method. That's how it was the implementation. That's how it works since ASP.NET 1.0, actually. And the result is 3.125. If I run again, it will be 3.0 something. So it doesn't take longer than normal. But if I run my load test now, that's what I want to see you, is that everything, it becomes much quicker. Why? Because instead of blocking my request thread, with database calls, when everything is done and I'm coming to the pre-render phase, when I'm done with the pre-render, the thread is released. I run the asynchronous call into another thread from the thread pool, and then when those are done, a new request thread is getting from the queue just to send back the result. Most of the times you'll get the same thread, but it's not a guarantee. So Microsoft never guarantees that it would be the same thread. So the result is that, look, now I have 0.47, 0.29, and 3.89, 4.63. So I didn't solve the problem with the first page or with the slow page, although it's not that slow if you have to wait 3 seconds for it. But what I didn't solve, but I solved the problem with the default ESPX. Now, from ASP.NET 2.0, Microsoft introduced a new thing, a new way of doing things, which is called page asynchronous tasks. So add-on pre-render complete, they felt it's a little bit too old-fashioned, let's put it this way, and they added page async tasks. A page async task takes exactly the same parameters as an add-on pre-render async complete. So it means it takes a begin handler and an end handler. What should I run at the beginning? What should I run at the end? It takes a timeout handler in case that you want to, in case that you have a timeout, which you specify, you know, by telling in the page how long or how big should be the timeout. And then you specify as well if you want all those things to run in parallel or if you want them to run sequential. So now you have a choice. Of course, it's a bit strange because you can't say, I can't create a group and say, you run those in parallel and you run those sequential. You just say either for one run in parallel, which means I'm okay if you run it in parallel with someone else that has run in parallel, and all those that say run sequential will run sequential without allowing anyone else to run. So if we look now at the number of requests that we managed to serve, we are up to 5,929 and 6,022 here. 0.31, the average time, 4.71, the average time for the add-on pre-render async complete. Of course, if you have a lot of requests like that, you are creating a lot of threads, and that would add to the time it takes. And again, keep in mind that I'm 250 users that are both, you know, are on the both ends of the serving at the game. So I'm trying to test myself, and then I'm coming here and receiving the tree, see how it works. So it's a bit, yeah, it's one machine that does everything. So if we look at the other solution, the one that I just mentioned with the page async task, I can go and say, okay, let's register an asynchronous task on the page. And I'm using almost the same code. So instead of add-on pre-render async complete, I say page register async task, create a new async task, and the async task takes the begin handler and then the end handler method. And then, as I said, it takes three more parameters. The first parameter is the timeout handler. What do I want to do if I have a timeout? The third one would be, the fourth one would be actually some state that I want to pass around. And then this one, the last parameter, is the one that says run in parallel. So now, if I run the application, I feel lucky page shouldn't take more than 1 second. So now if I run my tests again, I do my load testing, what I should get now, it should be a somewhat of an improvement. Again, I have only a dual-core machine with 8 gigabytes of RAM, so it's not really that powerful, and because of that, you won't see a very good improvement. But on my other machine, what I got actually was exactly the same, 0.29, and 1.2 I got for the second request. So you can see that you have almost a flat line. There is one problem, though. From time to time, I get a spike like this. Does anyone want to comment or care about it? What do you think is the problem over there? What is the spike? I have here one thing that says 16 thresholds violation. My threshold violations are actually related to my processor. it says my processor runs 99.2. So actually, I'm using the processor as it is supposed to be used. You know? I'm using it almost full. 99%. So of course, I get some threshold violations because the setup is for 75. So if you have more than 75%, just report one new threshold violation. But if we look at the whole list, you would see that the processor actually is up to 96, 95, 99, 98. So it's always even exceeds 100%. Not really. See? So if we go back to the graph here, you will see it does that, but from time to time it spikes because I get, again, the processor, it's not quick enough to solve the problem. But at least I know that I'm using my resources for full for this one. Any questions? In order for both of those things to work, we need to do two things. One of them is to go into the display recipe ASPX file and to add a timeout here. Let me go back. Into the ASPX file, I have async true, and here I can add timeout. But without async true, it won't work. It will give you an error telling that you're trying to use some asynchronous things in a page, but you don't use async true on the page. So that's the first thing you need to do. The second thing you need to do is to go into web config and make sure that your database connection allows you to be used asynchronously. Why? If you don't do that by specifying asynchronous processing equals true, if you don't do that, what would happen is that when you run your application, you open a connection in one thread, you send the rest of the execution into another thread, and then you try to close the connection on this other thread. So if ADO.NET doesn't know that you are planning to use it asynchronously, it might even release the connection while we are still bringing data. So from time to time, you'll get exceptions and telling you that you're trying to close the connection from a thread that wasn't opened from. So by adding asynchronous processing true, you say, I'm okay with this kind of behavior in my application. Next thing we can do, actually, it's to forget everything I said so far and use asynchronous and await, meaning that we need to use ASP.NET 4.5, or actually C# 5 and ASP.NET and .NET 4.5. So let me show you how it works. More or less, I have exactly the same kind of code. And by the way, I have some slides for that. So in C#, async await, you know, those two new keywords, and the async programming that came with C# 5.0 makes it look like synchronous programming, which makes it very easy for everyone to follow the code, you know. So there is a implementation using Go2, using a lot of, you know, callbacks, but it's not us that need to do it. It's not us that need to complicate the things in order to make it run. Behind the curtains uses task and task of T, and there are two new keywords, contextual, meaning that if you put a sync somewhere and it's not on a method declaration, you can still use it as a variable name. I wouldn't recommend it, but, you know, for people that already use those names in their code, the application shouldn't just crash because now Microsoft introduced two new keywords. So that's why they have it as contextual keywords for that reason. And then you have await, and await actually says, please give the control to, you know, back to the caller, and then, you know, whenever I'm done with it, I'll notify the controller, so the caller, so the caller can continue running the application. If you use the asynchronous programming model, the one with begin and end result that I showed with the begin invoke and end invoke that I showed earlier, and you are not using yet, or the method is not yet implemented as an asynchronous method. So, for instance, execute reader was not implemented as an asynchronous method until Microsoft did not release the ASP.NET, or actually .NET 4.5. And so if you wanted to use it with async, you would need to do your own implementation. Or what Microsoft did, they did some extension methods that they were implemented like this. So you can, and if you have your own method and you don't want to do the async implementation, you can use the task completion source that would actually help you solve this kind of the problem. So let's look at how can we simplify and modernize our application by using async. If we use async, now what I need to do is to go into my method and say, okay, this method needs to be asynchronous. So this is my previous get detail, and if the get details was returning void, now it should return task. And then, of course, I need to mark the method as async. By marking the method as async, what I say is that somewhere inside, I might use await. I might. It allows you to use async, but if you don't use await, it will give you a warning and saying, okay, you're using async here, but I don't see any place in your code where you are using await, so why do you call it as an asynchronous method when it's not? Then, as I showed you, there is now an execute reader async. So if before was returning a SQL data reader, now it returns the task of a SQL data reader. By using the await takes care of the unpacking. So it from the task, it takes the result and then gives it to the SQL data reader. So what would happen is that the method that calls us comes and runs until here, and then at this point, goes back to the calling method. So the calling method can continue to do some other things, or can await for the result, or can do something. And the same I've done for the other two methods, and that's about it. Now, I need to call them. In order to call them, of course, I can either use task and then get the result, or I can use async await again. So I can do my page load async, and then I would say await for the first method, await for the second method, await for the third method, and when you're done, you're done. If we run the application now, doesn't matter, what we will see is that it will take how many seconds? Very few. One error we got here, and it says, in order for you to use async await, it's that you need to set up HTTP runtime target framework to 4.5. If not, it takes by default 4.0, and 4.0 didn't have support for async await. And this mistake I did on purpose, actually, because this one is commented here, specially put there, so we remember to add that. So now if we run again, we will see that the application runs. So how long do you think it takes this I feel lucky page now? Any guess? One or three. There are two possible answers. 1 or 3 seconds. One. Who is for one? Very few people. Three. Yeah, the result is already there. No, that was not fair. Okay, 3 seconds. Why did it take 3 seconds? Because here, if we look in the code, I'm saying await. So by saying await, it means I'm blocking here. And then I go to the next one, await. So I'm waiting for the next one. And then I'm waiting for the next one. So the simplest way to resolve this is actually to kick all three methods to start running. When you start them, instead of calling await, you say, okay, I want the result to be set into a task. Cancel. So I get the task result from there. And then I say, oh, await here at the end for all those three tasks when they are done. I could have said await T1, await T2, await T3, because I'm actually kicking all those three methods to run one after the other. So again, now if we run the application, what would happen is that we get 1 second, 1.1. And of course, if you run the load test, you'll get almost the same result, or actually the same result like we got for page async result. Now, Microsoft recommends that you are not doing asynchronous your event handlers. So page load shouldn't be asynchronous. Page init and none of them. If you want to do something like that, if you need asynchronous methods, you need to actually, you can either use task or you can use, again, page async task. So the new version of page async task has support for tasks as well. So let me show you how we solve exactly the same problem without using await in a page load. It's by going to Team Explorer and take page async. When we take page async, we get the three tasks, and then I can either say three times page register async task, page register async task, page register async task, and tell if the task should be running parallel or not. And the page async task now, the method, takes as a parameter a lambda expression, or a func actually, that returns a task. So this is my task. So I can actually send three tasks one after the other. Or as I did here, I say task when all, meaning that, okay, when all those three tasks are done, I want you to mark the page task as ready. So what that means, it means that page pre-render complete will be triggered after all those three tasks are run. So if we run again the application, we will see that the result shouldn't take more than 1 second, 0.00 something. Cool, isn't it? Just to show you again the code, the only thing that we've done differently from the previous version is that void became task. We added async here to mark the method as async. And another recommendation from Microsoft is that all the asynchronous methods should have the suffix async. With the async suffix, it means that you are telling the world that this method actually can be used together with an await if you want to use it. And then inside the method, I'm using somewhere await, and this await would actually return an async. Now, before we finish, I want to show you how you can do the same thing for an MVC application. If you use a modern MVC, like MVC 4 or 5, you can already use tasks. So instead of returning an action result, you return a task of action result, and that's about it. And then it works without any issues. And I mean, if you have a method, and inside the method you use await, you can return the regular action result, but this action result would be wrapped inside a task. So you don't have to think about adding a task or creating a task. Because if you looked at my code earlier, I never used any task. But what happened if you use a version that does not support async await, does not use the task of T as a data result? Well, MVC has something called a sync controller. A sync controller was a class introduced in MVC 2.0, has a property called a sync manager. Inside the async manager, you can register all your asynchronous operations. So when you have an asynchronous operation, your operation, so for instance, let's say we have a method that was called display recipe. If I want to make it asynchronous, I have to rename it to display recipe async, takes the normal input parameter like my display recipe would have taken, but returns void. And then I need to add a new method called display recipe completed that returns the action result. So that was it. You have to split the method in two. Now, in order for you to be able to communicate, to tell when the method is done, you had the async manager. So inside this method, I say, okay, in my async manager, I want you to notice that I have some outstanding asynchronous operation. In my case, three, meaning I have to read three times from the database, and those three operations, I want you to know that those are asynchronous. And then I call the methods. Inside every single method, what I'm doing, I'm saying, okay, when you're done, I want you to decrement the outstanding operation, and I want you to send as a parameter to my end method, as a parameter, as a value for the details parameter, I want you to send this result. The result is what I get from the database. So if we look back here, my display result completed takes three parameters. And those three parameters, I actually set them up with the async manager parameters for the method. So the method will get this, and when I get this information, I can just set it up. I created a view model just because I want to have three different data structures, not put everything in a model or use dynamic, just to show it as a way of doing it. And then I return the view, like any normal MVC operation. So Application should look almost the same. Almost. And I just changed a little bit the way it shows the data. Those data are actually from the filter that I showed, which is a timer filter I just created. Whenever I start the method, it looks at when it starts and when it ends, and then it adds the information. So what I'm doing here, I'm saying, OK, we started at 136.17, we finished at 136.18, and then the execution time was 1 second. Again, because I had three of them, I run them all of them in parallel, I could do that. And if you want, as I told you, you can use tasks. So if you, whenever you have an async method and you can use async await in your application, I really recommend go and use the wait and return task of result instead. Now, there are a lot of debates and discussions. When should you use that? Maybe for the database won't be always necessary to use it, especially if you have a slow database. It won't help that you create, you know, you make a big queue out of that. So it will help if you just increase the number of threads and then you wait for that or try to make your database quicker. Ask Unai. But for web services, for network communication, for WCF services, whatever you use, you can use that without that kind of technique without any issue. So that concludes a little bit what we've talked to, or our session today. We talked about the page lifecycle of the ASP.NET. We almost saw how you can load test your application. We talked about some asynchronous pages and actions, how you can create those and what exactly is necessary to do that. And we look for the asynchronous support in C#. Now it's called 5.0, it's not vNext anymore. But for a long time, it was called vNext. Whenever Microsoft does not figure out how to call it, they say vNext, and then they go with 3.5, 4.5, something like that. So that's it. Thank you.